Hello and welcome to this week's version of Innovation Deciphered. Today I'm joined by Mark Shedroff. Mark has an interesting background. He has a doctorate in physics and chemistry. He started his own construction company and he's then developed a platform to get product to construction sites more effectively than has been done before. And in this episode I'm discussing with Mark his journey, but really trying to get some insight into what makes a successful enterprise. We'll be picking up things such as his whole idea generation, the need for finance, the need for technology, the need to align that with good people, with the right attitudes, but as importantly, to learn from others' failures. So I hope you enjoy this episode, and if you do, I'd look forward to feedback as well. Mark Shedroff, I knew that I was going to struggle with it. Now, you need to explain about how I should pronounce that better. Shedroff.
Shedroff, that's really good, actually.
Well, you're welcome, Mark. Look, I'm delighted you're able to take the time to join us today. As you know, our listeners are very interested about the whole journey of innovation and how that applies to businesses generally. And I know, having spoken to you over the years, you've not only been successful in business, but you've allowed yourself to get frustrated with things that don't happen,
yes,
and turn that into ideas and have brought that into enterprise-type solutions. But maybe if we go all the way back, I'm interested to know that you started off with a physics degree, you then moved into construction, and then you're now into a solution to getting product to consumers. So, take me through that journey.
Well, so originally I did a degree in joint field physics and chemistry.
Right.
I then ran a construction company with a friend of mine for a
while. As you do after physics and chemistry.
As you do. And then went back and did a PhD in chemistry.
Right.
And then I sort of postdocs, and my sort of postdocing became more and more physics orientated.
Okay.
And I was sort of increasingly working on things like the sort of chemistry analog of MRI.
Okay.
So we were sort of generating software and things like that, and new pulse sequences and that sort of thing. So I've had quite a sort of broad understanding of, yeah, sort of the tech environment as well. So
right.
I'm not too afraid to sort of roll my sleeves up and get in and look at the back end of what's going on in some dirty software. So.
Interesting, because as an industry, the construction industry, it either blames itself or other people blame it for being backward in the use of modern technology. Has that been your view of life, or is it just that it's there but it isn't really taken up as much as it should be?
I think it's a very fair question. I mean, I think that the take-up is quite poor.
Right.
And so the way it's utilised is quite poor. So, I mean, if you look at what was going on maybe 5 years ago, people were using iPads, but they were just digital filing cabinets.
Yeah.
They weren't really using and mining the data that's actually sat within them. They weren't getting process flow and that sort of thing. And you weren't then sort of... back then, it was less so now, but back then you were still not really getting linking of APIs to merchants and things like that. So that you had sort of seamless order.
Well, you're jumping ahead to the merchant bit. Just go back to the general, and then we'll come up to how you, yes, converted that into, yeah, business proposition.
So, I mean, 2012, we developed our own platform for, you know, doing task orientated management.
Okay.
So, which, because at that stage, there just wasn't anything out there that...
Because they purportedly, didn't they, the out-of-the-box type solutions, but it wasn't fit for purpose.
It wasn't fit for purpose. It didn't tie the whole thing together.
Right.
You couldn't tie that together into sort of automatically generating purchase orders. You didn't have the sort of levels of permissions and things you needed to be able to let workers loose to try and get them to engage with the system, which is absolutely vital.
Right.
If you're going to have any kind of a system, everybody's got to be involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just have it being run in the office, otherwise it just turns into the analog of another green screen, sure, system that nobody really understands how it works or buys into. That's something I found quite...
And, you know, in event, we're always interested in, there's an idea,
yeah,
but so what? You've got to do something with it.
Yes.
So you had an idea that could improve something.
Yeah.
You've arguably come up with an improvement, but how have you decided that improvement could and should be exploited? Have you just used it within your own business? Have you looked to sell it beyond?
We did. I mean, we did look at it. And Maybe this is a bit we actually want to gloss over because we were given a bit of dud advice at that particular stage.
I'm sure our listeners would want to hear the failures as well as the successes.
Well, yeah, failures are important, but I mean, we definitely discussed this with a couple of leading merchants who were actually quite interested in integrating it. And then actually we got somebody else in who looked at it and basically said, well, because of the way we constructed it, said that the comment was, you can't patent or copyright an Excel spreadsheet. It's like, well, hang on a minute, you know, there's actually an awful lot more to this than an Excel spreadsheet once you're actually sort of linking into a range of systems and drawing it all together. And so I think we took that advice at face value and stalled. And in retrospect, I look at it and go, well, actually, if we carried on down the development pathway of this, we actually had something that was very far ahead of its time in terms of what it was doing. And if we carried on down the development pathway and externalised it and commercialised it, we would have ended up with something very valuable.
It's really important. So what would you have done differently, knowing what you know now?
I would have ignored that advice.
And done what?
And just carried on developing it.
And what protection would you have gained from that?
Well, we would have been able to commercialise it. I mean, I think the idea that you can't protect something because of the way it's constructed is inherently wrong, because people don't necessarily need to have access to the core of that. So they don't need, you know, software as a service. Yeah. People don't need to understand how the back end, they have no sight as to how the back end of the thing is constructed. Sure. They're just putting data into it on their iPad, and that's absolutely fine, or their desktop or phone or what have you. So from that point of view, it was actually a slightly nonsensical comment that was made at that point.
Okay. So ignore the expert advice at times, or challenge the...
I think you've got to challenge received wisdom. Otherwise, construction is very, very conservative, as we all know, and progress would be unbelievably slow if we just always accepted that the solution was on the table in front of us and we couldn't innovate.
So let's go back a step then and say, what was the problem statement? So a lot of our listeners won't know what the product is, and we'll come on to that. But what was the problem that you were facing, that you were looking to overcome?
Well, I mean, the problem we were facing was communication with the merchant. So communication from site to merchant, so we were able to get accurate picking of materials. Now, obviously, you want to tie into that health and safety and other things, but we'll leave that on one side, otherwise the conversation will become mind-numbingly complex. So the platform did all those things. But what it enabled people to do in 2012 was to pick from a pre-populated shopping cart. It would then work on the basis of SKU, EAN, i.e. barcode, and it would be able to put those things together into a list that was for that particular task. You could then process that list, it would then split it into a series of individual purchase orders, which then went off to the merchants. Now, most systems now can do that sort of thing, but back then, that was actually, you know, really quite cutting edge to be able to take those lists and split it. So the advantage from us is we could control the buying process. Mm-hmm. We could control where people were buying things from. We could control the prices that went on the face of the purchase order. It's very common at the time, it still is. Oh, can you give us a purchase order? And the merchants can assume that's an open number that they can just enter anything, any quantities, any value up against.
Yeah.
Which I find a very bizarre process. But you want very specific
limits. Yeah.
Some limits on it. Yeah. Because otherwise we're in the realms of blank checks, and we all know how that goes. That's not a clever idea. So we fully developed that platform, and then you've had the ability to, as the items came into site, you could check them off, photograph them, lost damage, and then that would automatically communicate back to the merchant if there was a divergence between what you ordered and what had actually been delivered. So it was at the time a relatively comprehensive system. But you still run into the problem, and this is where we run into the next piece of innovation, that you run into the issues that occur in the merchants, which is largely attitudinal from the staff. I mean, you know, I think most of the big merchants, if you sit down and talk to their board members privately, they will admit that, you know, staff attitudes are not what they could be. So you end up with people who aren't really particularly interested in doing things in a timely way. Mm-hmm. Stuff isn't done particularly accurately. Product's not handled very well. And cross-checks aren't made. And I'll give you an example of that. But, you know, we ordered for doing a roof. We ordered some roof battens, some copper nails, some membrane. and two pallets of slates. So we got some membrane, some roof batten, some copper nails, and 2 1-ton bags of slate chippings, because they'd literally gone SLA and then hit the key on the first thing that came up. And that's a true story. Right. You could go on with those sorts of stories, and I'm sure they will resonate to anybody who runs a construction site. You know, when stuff's coming off the lorry, you're going, how on earth did that get on the lorry in the first place? Who actually, and the point about the story is, it's clear nobody there was thinking, because that package of stuff doesn't go together. It doesn't make sense. You're delivering most of a roof, but then you're delivering a piece of landscape at the same time. Yeah. So it's about people not engaging and not caring very much, which then sort of brought us on to the next project, which was actually how do you very rapidly deliver stuff to site. So we got incredibly frustrated over actually sourcing a lot of sort of specialised stuff, like sort of brochure cutters for drilling steel beams and all sorts of bits and pieces that you need on site quite urgently. Most merchants, it's too complex for them to cope with. And then you get into a whole range of specials. And once you get into specials with a merchant, you're into a disaster, to be honest. So we need to think of a way of doing this in a very timely, cost-effective way. And we started housing quite a lot of this stuff ourselves in our own little warehouse. And then, at the time, probably in sort of 2015, 16, it probably wasn't quite possible to do on demand in the way that was starting to emerge with sort of deliveries of this world were starting to appear. But then, sort of in 2016, I was on holiday, and I sat down, and I was in Spain, and I sat by the pool, and I started writing a business plan
for how to actually
turn this idea into a business.
Yeah.
And it took a few years to actually sort of make sure all the moving parts were actually there, so we could actually start to think about how we delivered it. And then in 2019, I engaged somebody to produce a software platform, which that went on for about 4 months, and I sacked them, and then did it myself, because it was quicker, easier, and cheaper to take some existing commercial software, stitch it together. And that's the platform we actually run with today.
Right.
So our proposition is we deliver in 90 minutes to trades around central and southwest London. And so we are in a journey to get that funded, which has been an interesting process in itself. Funding innovation in the construction centre is quite hard to find people who actually are in that space.
With justification, would you say?
No, I don't think with justification. I think it's a largely empty space, actually. You go and talk to a lot of people and you put the numbers on the table in front of them and you have a conversation that runs like this, and I think anybody who's tried to raise will recognise this conversation. It's a great idea, the basket size is great, Mark. It's fantastic. That's going to make lots and lots of money. So you're going to invest.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not in that space. And that happens lots. There's lots of people out there who are playing idea catcher and thinking, are they going to move out of their safe space? And I think we had a whole sort of crop of these kind of conversations back at the time when money was being poured into online supermarkets. Now, in construction product, the margins are actually quite good. In supermarkets, the margins are notoriously appalling. Sure. And it's quite hard to understand why people are unable to recognise the fact we've got a larger basket size than typically you're paying for a bottle of wine and a couple of packets of crisps and some guacamole. and we'll be sending out sort of £200 worth of bits at a sensible margin. So that was quite a head scratch. But I think then we approached that the other way around. And Keith Wright, who's the former trading director of Travis Perkins, has come on board recently, is now helping. He's sort of looking at the other way around, which is, who historically has been interested in this space. And so he's sort of got an encyclopedic knowledge of the area. And so he's now much more successfully engaging with the right people, I think.
As I've understood it, how you've explained it, that seems commonplace now. It wasn't when you started, but most of us are used now to getting what we want when we want it quite quickly.
Yeah.
If I've understood you correctly, the real proposition that distinguishes your service is the speed of delivery.
Its speed and its range. I think, you know, we carry...
Well, what I was getting at, Mark, just again to interrupt, is are we just not in danger of getting those slate chippings earlier? They're still not right. So have you really gained anything?
Well, I mean, you gain something because we are warehousing all that product. We are not using people from within the industry to do the stock control. So, in fact, all of the people we are using to do stock and management are actually ex-Amazon.
Right, so again, let's just dwell on that for a little bit, because what you identified earlier was a behavioural issue, yes. Attitudinal issue.
Yes.
You've still got people in the warehouse.
Yes, absolutely.
But they have different behaviours, different attitudes. How did you achieve that?
Well, it's where you get them from. So you're looking for people whose whole thing is about speed and accuracy.
Right.
You know, so people whose mentality is everything is driven from a barcode.
Right.
People who understand that it's critical that the exit weight from the warehouse is correct. Everything goes out, it goes on schedule.
So the technology alone isn't the answer, it's technology and getting the right attitudes together.
Yes, you've got to couple those two things up, absolutely, yeah. Right. So you've obviously got a fully digital input to actually for the ordering process.
Mm-hmm.
So you're avoiding the unnecessary keying errors for somebody typing SLA and then hitting return on the first product that pops up. That doesn't mean we wouldn't take a telesales order, but we are dominantly a fully digital business.
But it's interesting you say that, but you also refer to the fact that you have a warehouse with product, and therefore you've got all the stock control type issues, the cash flow issues associated with that. And by very nature, then, it's quite discrete in its geography.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to scale that? Or how is it scalable? Because, again, you've got to get the technology clearly is scalable, but are the attitudes and the behaviours scalable? And also, the warehouse, that starts to become quite a big on-cost, does it not? Aren't you better off just having a platform and having distributed warehousing around?
Well, I mean, this is interesting, and there are a number of people who've tried to be an aggregation platform, the common thread that runs through most of those is that somebody in the background who's worked for Deliveroo pretty much every single time.
Would you hold them up as the exemplars of warehouse to person delivery?
Well, I mean, Deliveroo aren't really warehouse, their kitchen to...
Source of product.
Source of product, but you've generally, the chef is pretty engaged to probably cook the right thing because they're a trained chef.
So again, it's a behaviour and attitude.
Yeah, again, it's behaviour and attitude. They've actually got some kind of investment in it. Or if it's an SME outfit, then probably the owner is actually in there driving that.
Yeah.
So, and then you've also got the ability within Deliveroo, obviously restaurants that fail to deliver in a timely or accurate way, they ultimately get penalised within the system. So there is a natural feedback loop. The problem arises that when you try and become the aggregator, and you're in that sort of sense, and you're picking up from lots of merchants, you straight away run into this attitudinal problem. That manifests itself in the fact that stuff's not necessarily picked in a timely way. Stuff won't be, if it is picked, it won't be prepared. So you'll have, for instance, I ordered from one of my competitors, I ordered a coil, a 3 meter length of flexible plastic pipe that was supposed to be sold as a coil. It wasn't coiled, the plumbers merchants couldn't be bothered to coil it. So they rejected the use of a bike for that, so that then that had to go into a van, which was an absolute performance when the item was clearly identified that it was supposed to be coiled. And to be honest, you could just coil it between your hands, put a couple of zip ties around it or some tape or something, and it would have gone. It really wasn't a problem to solve that, but they were not going to solve that problem. This is the problem with the aggregator model. You can't get over that. Because you then run into the next problem of the aggregator model, which is stock accuracy, which again is an attitudinal thing. And if people are damaging stock and they don't want to own up to it and it's just basically getting chucked in the bin or stock is then disappearing in somebody's backpack or whatever, that then starts to cause major, major problems. And then you have the next problem, which is that if you've got a large range of merchants, you're trying to integrate those merchants into a huge range of APIs and software systems, legacy software systems, which are ultimately green screen systems in the background, so they're not very cuddly to try and interface with, and you're using a whole series of different strange technologies to try and knit that thing together, which gets to a level of complexity where I think it becomes unhandleable. And certainly that was where Bob Trade, which was that was supposed to be a sort of online app where you could go and find the best best value palletized items, they ultimately failed, as one of the people involved there said, because accuracy wasn't there and stock count just wasn't right. Yeah. So it wasn't possible to get around those particular problems. And you had a more recent failure, which was Snap-it, which was predominantly plumbing and heating based. But again, they were really struggling because they would get orders in and essentially go shopping to try and find the stuff. And you run into all of those same problems. It just becomes unmanageable. Sure. And there's a level of human intervention fixing all the problems that arises. That's where the scaling issue arises, because if you're having to fix manually 1 in 3 deliveries, I reckon, that becomes a monumental burden, because you've also then got the failed delivery costs of using third-party couriers.
Right. But in a way, wouldn't Jeff Bezos have been facing the same problems 20 years ago? What I'm guessing, and going back to the question I asked earlier, is about how do you scale this? Because what's always impressed me is that you've got frustrated with things,
yes,
and you've come up with solutions, yes, and those solutions have resolved the frustration locally.
Yeah.
But the growth of this and getting that to solve problems in a broader scale for the industry have not yet manifested themselves, and I know that continues to be a frustration of yours and that I tend to share with you. But if it also feels like we have identified that there is a problem there that we can't overcome on our own, and therefore, what is the solution? How do we scale your solution so that everyone benefits from it?
The trite answer is investment, and we are in a position where we've got an established software platform. We've got the margins that we need to operate. We are mostly manufacturer supplied directly. We don't necessarily deal with intermediaries, so that's why our margins are quite good.
Right.
So, but we're not buying on the secondary and the wholesale market. Right. We use things like electric cargo bikes, so we're able to shift quite large loads of material. So again, it's ours.
Yeah.
We've also got a very close relationship with a couple of partners if we need more capacity.
Mm-hmm.
But our sort of baseline capacity is in-house. So those are all things that are quite scalable. I mean, so once you've got the platform, you've identified what the stock ranges are, and that's an ongoing piece of work to broaden out the stock ranges. Once you've identified that is barely cookie cutter, I think.
Yeah.
You've just got to find where the geographical centres are, where you've got the magic of lots of frustrated tradesmen, yeah, and lots of congestion. Because that's the other thing that plays into this that we haven't really discussed is London is seizing up. There is no doubt about it. I mean, TfL are not really interested in increasing traffic speed. So, parking spaces are being physically removed on a daily basis from every borough we can think of. So the idea of you getting into a van, going somewhere to pick something up in a hurry and returning, you've then got a problem at both ends, which is you've got to park at the other end, then you return. And can you actually find a parking space to park back in?
Not to mention the environmental impact.
Oh, which is absolutely enormous, which we then get around by using an electric cargo bike.
Yeah.
Which can then use we have bounteous cycle lanes around the place. We've got cycle lanes coming out of our ears, so we may as well use those.
But as I knew would have a mark, having spoken to you over the years, we could spend hours talking about this.
We could.
What I would like to try and sum up my learning from this is that the technology will always be there, but unless you've got the people aspect that's tied up, and obviously the finance around it,
yes,
you're always going to struggle to scale.
Yes.
So I suppose if that's the right summation of where we are, just to conclude, what is your call for anyone listening as to how they can assist you and how you can assist them to help us make this industry better?
Well, I mean, we are...
Just in 30 seconds.
Yeah, so I mean, we've reached out to various large and medium-sized merchants to try and see if they want to form a partnership with us. We're reaching out to various capital providers to see if they want to form a partnership with us, and we are probably looking for around 4 million to scale us to the next stage of this, which is to 3 more bases around London and a test city outside London.
Okay. Well, you never know. There may be someone listening that's got 4 million under their bed that they don't know what to do with. So,
well, I think there may also be somebody who feels it's a very wise investment as well. There is a strong ESG pathway in there. You know, we're taking a lot of carbon off the road.
Yeah.
And we are solving a real problem that the other majors are not stepping in to solve.
Yeah. Well, look, with your agreement, we'll include your contact details so people can get in contact if they're interested in investing. But I'm sure there'll be a lot of people that will be interested in the story that we could cover beyond what we've discussed today. So appreciate your time today, Mark. Thank you for joining us, and look forward to continuing the conversation sometime in the future. And thank you all for joining us. I hope you found that interesting. If you did enjoy it, please do like it. If you've got any comments, we'd always be pleased to hear them. And if any of you would like to join us on a podcast in the future, please do be in touch. Bye for now.